Our next case this morning is number 052011, Jose Gutierrez against the Attorney General.
Good morning. If it pleases the Court, John Qual on behalf of Jose Luis Gutierrez. Judges, I believe that there's two main questions here, and the primary and initial question is whether the IJ committed clear error by finding that there was no violation of the regulations in regard to the acceptance of an adjustment application by the INS in this case. And secondly, if it is found that the judge committed clear error, does this arise to affirmative misconduct? And admittedly, this affirmative misconduct is based on new evidence which was not available at the time that the original argument was made.
What is your best evidence of affirmative misconduct by the government, and where in this record will we find this evidence? I understand that you believe that there is evidence in the Ramos settlement, but where is the evidence in this case?
The evidence in this case, Your Honor, was presented as, in effect, as an offer of proof in front of the immigration judge, which was not questioned in any way. The immigration judge's decision clearly accepted every presentation of the petitioner in regard to the fact that it was a fraudulent application filed by a defrauding attorney, and that it was completely baseless. For the Immigration Service to have made it a practice to accept completely baseless applications was clearly, in my mind, and I think in the minds of any immigration professional in those days, just clearly improper and had to be done in a knowing way. And that was argued in the record when it was stated before the BIA that though there was no actual proof of intentional activity at that time, counsel's knowledge of the competence of the immigration officers who were adjudicating these cases could only lead to one conclusion, that they knew what they were doing. They were accepting absolutely baseless applications. Granted, I could not corroborate that in writing until the Ramos case was completed in front of Judge Phillip below, at which point the Ramos plaintiff's attorneys were kind enough to inform me of a transcript of a deposition that the supervising adjudicating officer of INS at that time had given. And it's completely corroborated. But in this record, Judge, it goes back to what the IJ admitted below, that it was a baseless filing. A baseless filing, by definition, had to be rejected. It could not be accepted.
How we distinguish Lopez Chavez? Such a recent.
Well, Lopez was a petitioner who was requesting status quo be that a stay of deportation be granted pending the disposition of the case, and the question of affirmative misconduct in Lopez Chavez was dicta at the very end, in the same way that every judge below this court has stated it does not appear that there was affirmative misconduct, and that was the statement in Lopez Chavez. It does not appear. There was no ability for anyone to make this argument until certain documents recently came to light through Ramos. So Lopez Chavez was a stay of deportation case. It was not a removal case, and it was dicta in regard to affirmative misconduct. And clearly, they didn't have any proof in front of them. Your Honor, since mid-1996, every immigration professional in Chicago knew that something was seriously wrong in what was occurring at the INS. And it wasn't just the private attorneys. The government knew this also. The granting of employment authorization based on an entirely baseless application was wrong. It created a frenzy in the community. All of this was done through defrauding representatives, notary publics, and the like. In this case, a defrauding attorney.
See, that's the problem here. I mean, there is, you know, no question that his lawyer defrauded Mr. Gutierrez. I don't know what to say.
Your Honor, I can only bolster my argument based on newly discovered evidence. What we all knew in the immigration community was uncontroverted. The immigration judge agreed that it was a terrible circumstance. Everyone agreed. If you mention the name of this attorney to any immigration officer or other immigration professional, they just shake their head.
Yet he's only been disbarred for 2 years. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I was a witness for the state of Indiana Supreme Court at the Indiana ARDC, and the prosecuting attorney of the case stated that since it was Indiana, since there were 80 complaints roughly filed against him, all of which came from Chicago, the immense cost of prosecuting the case led them to that decision that if he would accept suspension, they would leave it at that. There was never any question of the enormity of what this gentleman was up to. And every immigration officer knew that, as corroborated by Mr. Chan's deposition, where he mentioned that they saw these names all over the place, attorneys, notaries. They knew what was going on. And they were complicit. The government was complicit in this scheme. And instead of rejecting the application, entirely contrary to the regulations, the Chicago INS, the only district in the country that did this, created a new category, not rejected, not denied, rather frivolous and should be rejected, but we've got to do something to teach these people a lesson. There's no such category in the reg.
Are you familiar with Section 2347 of the Judicial Code, which apparently permits courts of appeals on application to remand a case to an agency for further development of the record?
Yes, Your Honor. I think I made my argument in regards to remand to the district court, but maybe I made the argument incorrectly, Judge.
Where did you make that argument?
Well, from the outset of my brief, I was requesting remand to the district court for further fact-finding. Mm-hmm. Remand to the district court to pursue the estoppel theory through the aid of discovery.
Where are you? Where are you?
I beg your pardon. In my opening brief at page 21 in my conclusion.
Okay, thank you.
And as stated, this category that was invented by the Chicago INS was affirmative misconduct. It was violative of every one of their internal memorandums on how to handle these cases, and it was a due process violation, causing Mr. Gutierrez to be placed in these proceedings when his application never should have been accepted. If there's no further questions, I'd like to reserve further time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Ms. Wright.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Jocelyn Wright. I'm here on behalf of Respondent, the United States Attorney General. The parties here don't dispute that what happened to Mr. Gutierrez is unfortunate. However, the parties also don't dispute that he is an alien subject to removal as charged, that he is ineligible for any relief from removal, and that he has no legal right to remain in the United States in violation of the law. And under these circumstances...
Can you tell me, Ms. Wright, what motivated the Chicago office to use the information in the applications to initiate removal proceedings against the applicants? It just seems so punitive, so truly cruel. Isn't that a reason in itself to perhaps reconsider Lopez Chavez?
Your Honor, we believe that it's not clear from this record what motivated the INS. What is clear, however, is that the INS and the immigration authorities are authorized by Congress to enforce the immigration laws, and when they carry out that function, they're basically executing public policy as enacted by Congress.
Well, wouldn't it be a great public policy when everyone knows who these fraudulent, despicable attorneys are, instead of winking, blinking, and accepting these frivolous applications? Wouldn't it really be far more just to deny them? Rather than, you know, keeping this record and tracking, reading these briefs was but an education.
Well, what happened here, Your Honor, was that the INS did deny the application.
I mean,
and that's
I misspoke.
Okay, the INS did deny. What it can't do is it can't ignore and sanction a continuing violation of the immigration laws.
But see, my point is that the real violation here is allowing criminals to practice law in front of
you. But the INS didn't know at that point. All we have on this record is, under the regulations, if an alien submits an application for a benefit, the governing regulation requires the INS to accept that. They can't, in another case, if they front-desked it, as the Supreme Court has said in the legalization context, that would be a violation. They can't do that. They have to accept it. They have to process it with the fee. And that's what the INS did here. Now, upon review of the application, they determined that, no, he's not eligible after all. And so they sent him a notice of intent, a notice of denial, and after that, the NTA was served, and he was ordered to show cause why he shouldn't be removed. Now, all of those actions are completely consistent with the regulation, and in fact, they're required by law. There was no affirmative misconduct. And at no point has the INS ever told Mr. Gutierrez that, yes, we think you may be eligible for adjustment of status. What they did with respect to the grant of work authorization was to say, and this is in the record, in the letter that petitioner submitted to corroborate his filing of the application for employment authorization, the INS said, we've received your adjustment application. The number of applications is such that it'll take us at least 1 year to get to an interview with you. So during that time, you can go ahead and apply for work authorization so that you can work legally. You can stay here while the application is pending. That's not a guarantee that the application would be would be approved, or that he would be able to get adjustment. All that did was to allow him to go ahead and stay in the country and work legally in the meantime. That is not affirmative misconduct as far as the government is concerned. In fact, that's completely well within the regulations. And so to the extent that he is arguing that the INS's acceptance of and processing of the adjustment application and the acceptance, processing, and approval of employment authorization during the pendency of the adjustment application is affirmative misconduct, I don't think the record or the law would support that outcome. And that would also respond to your question earlier, Your Honor, about where is the evidence in this record of affirmative misconduct. There isn't any. To the extent that petitioner is relying on the facts, and I say that in quotes, elicited in Ramos, as we've set forth in our brief, those facts aren't really established. There's been no judicial finding because that case was settled. And the extra record evidence that he has submitted...
I'm sorry, you said there's been no judicial finding, am I right?
Yes, that's correct,
Thank
Your
you.
Honor. And so there's no factual findings that would be entitled to any deference or to judicial or to legal conclusiveness with respect to this lawsuit.
What kind of a showing do you think the petitioner would have to make to substantiate, to justify a remand under the statute I cited to permit the board to develop the record on this question?
Your Honor, I'm aware of the statute that you cited, and we addressed it on page 24 of our brief at footnote 15, and we've advised the court that the governing judicial review provisions over immigration proceedings, which is 8 U.S.C. 1252, specifically says, except that the Court of Appeals, may not order the taking of additional evidence under Section 2347C of Title 28. And so that avenue for... additional fact-finding or discovery is actually foreclosed by statute.
In all instances?
In all immigration cases that are governed under Section 1252, where judicial review is governed under 1252, which is the case here.
Just so I know, in other words, if a case came before us with the most heinous facts that you could ever possibly imagine, we would still be precluded from ordering the taking of additional evidence under Section 2347C?
I'm not sure if 2347C... I haven't looked at it recently, limits remand to the district court or to the agency. I don't know. But as far as I understand it, the remand under 2347 is to the district court, and it can't take additional evidence in that sense. Here, there's no reason to remand to the agency because the board's decision in this case rests on legal principles, not on any factual findings, other than the finding that he is removable as charged.
But again... If the facts were so heinous that, you know, you couldn't read it without trembling, still we would have no jurisdiction?
I'd have to go back and make sure of our position. I don't want to say something that misrepresents the government's position, but I would be happy to submit something to the court later on.
Because... I simply can't imagine that Congress has now precluded us from doing justice. It would be, I'm moving to Canada.
Well, we'll allow both counsel to submit a memorandum of law on that question within 10 days.
Yes, Your Honor. I do want to address the one point that the petitioner has consistently made here, or the argument, is that his argument is the government was complicit. That is completely unsupported by the record. The government was not complicit, as I've argued before and in our brief and here today. What the government was doing was completely consistent with its obligations to accept, process, and adjudicate applications for benefits from aliens. Had it actually affirmatively said to his former attorney, no, we're not going to accept any applications from you because we think you're a bad guy, without any evidence, that would have been a due process violation of that attorney's right to practice law. And the INS, especially the INS processing clerks or the adjudications clerks who accept these filings.
Well, but you added something with no evidence.
Isn't it?
In other words, when we have attorneys who come before us who lie, cheat, you know, pillage, whatever.
But the specter of fraud or suspicion of fraud is different from an actual judicial or a criminal indictment or some kind of some formal investigation that says you are or have been or suspected of doing these and you're on notice that we're not going to accept any of these filings from you because of your conduct. There's nothing in the record that says that the INS had that kind of evidence or that,
well,
that was even presented to them.
Forgive me, but imagine that the state of Indiana had 80 from this one person. 80. Imagine if they caught him on 80, how many there might have been.
And again, no one disputes that this is an unfortunate circumstance, but his remedy under the law was a private suit against his attorney for his attorney's wrongdoings, and this court has recently issued a decision in Magala. I see that my time is up. If I could just finish
Please
that
continue
thought.
Your thought.
This court issued a decision in Magala just, I believe, last month that says there is no constitutional right to effective counsel, and so any remedy that the alien has against the former counsel's ineffectiveness would have to be a contract-based suit for malpractice. And that's pretty much what's happened here.
How could that kind of an action ever produce appropriate relief?
The remedy,
the country, but you've got some money?
The remedy may not have been something that that would let him stay in the country, but it is the appropriate remedy under the law, which is that his attorney is prevented from doing the same kind of thing in the future to other aliens.
Sort of Alice in Wonderland, isn't it? It really is Alice in Wonderland world.
I understand that my time is up. Could I just briefly address the Lopez-Chavez suggestion that was dicta?
I think we can deal with that.
All right.
On our
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. How much time does counsel have? Counsel, you have a minute. Since we gave counsel a bit more time, we'll make that two, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points, Judge. We're completely in disagreement. There was no obligation to accept this application. It was accepted violating the regulations, and it was clear error of the IJ to find that there was no violation of the regulations. You cannot, by definition, call something baseless and say that there was an immediate visa availability, which was one of the threshold requirements. Secondly, this based on a violation of by the, a clear error by the IJ, this rises to a Fifth Amendment due process violation, which denied this petitioner his right to a fair hearing. Certainly, he does not have a right to stay, but he has a right to due process. Ironically, for a third point, the Immigration Service, the service now, CIS, has been incredibly generous, anecdotally, what I've been hearing through the immigration community, in regard to terminating proceedings through the Ramos case. This petitioner is not a member of any class. By virtue of 6 weeks, he had filed prior to the class designation. Any questions, I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Quayle.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel in this case. The case will be taken under advisement. We have completed the call of the